good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, opening up tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. in the Shreveport Little Theater. They present Tennessee Williams' American classic, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And joining me now in the Knoll Foundation studios are Mike Martindale, who plays Big Daddy in this production, along with Chris Allen Evans, who plays Gooper, and Blake Watkins, who plays Brick. Guys, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having us.
So, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. I get the images of a cat literally just kind of prancing around, just kind of really careful stepping. And there's a subtlety to that title that goes throughout this play. Let's talk about a quick synopsis of the storyline, which is about family interactions and about the things that we do to try to keep the rest of the family from knowing really what we're all about in a lot of ways. So can one of you kind of pick up on that? Let's start with Big Daddy.
Well, of course, the name symbolizes the uneasiness. You know, the theme of this, the show is lies and liars and truth. And what is the truth and what are the lies that we're presenting to everybody, including ourselves?
Yeah, that's definitely the underlying theme, right? You have this sort of dysfunctional family that has come together over the patriarch's soon to be demise, and of course,
well, they're coming together for his birthday.
Well, for his birthday, but what you realize is that he's ill, and he's wealthy, and everybody wants the plantation. So, how you talk to your family is not always exactly what you think, and what you say is not always exactly what you mean. And I think that's the big theme in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, but. A lot of people will know it from the movie with Elizabeth Taylor and Paul Newman, but the play is actually quite different from the movie. And Tennessee Williams is the master of sordid tales, and this is certainly one of them.
You know, the cat in this is really the wife, and so let's really talk about the character in relation to Big Daddy and also in relation to his wife. What's going on there?
So, yeah, you can definitely see a lot of... Brick's character in Big Daddy, as the play progresses, and how he necessarily talks to Big Mama, you can kind of definitely pick up on that through my character as the show goes on. And there are actually two people in the show that actually kind of come to some sort of agreement or medium ground to where some understanding between two people take place. It's between Big Daddy and myself. But, Maggie, she is, fireball character and, uses her tactics as a cat to get what she wants or attempt to get what she wants.
And that's Elise Birmingham.
Yes,
by
Elise
the way.
Birmingham.
And she's fantastic.
And in the storyline, she married up. She married out of poverty into, a wealthy plantation family. So she got out of the place that she wanted to be, but not necessarily to the place that she was hoping to get. So there's a lot of disappointment and unease in her life as far as, she's not living a life of poverty and hand to mouth anymore, but she's also not fulfilled in the ways that she wanted to. So let's talk a little bit about how she is really feeling that unfulfilled, because she is a catalyst for the Brick character in a lot of ways. I mean, they go at it, and they have some interesting dialogues on stage that really dig into their two characters. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, she goes off on tangents. There's pages and pages of, if you look at the script of subjects she's bringing up, just one after another. And as an actor, you have to listen to that, but also as the character, you pretty much tune out. Like you're not listening. You're listening to fragments of it. But so that's, it's challenging as an actor to listen to so much of that monologue, but then as a character to act like you're not listening. So, but her points are, to what she wants to get, what she wants. You know, she wants a piece of the pie. She wants, you know, this 28,000 acres, and she's using every tactic she can to hopefully get there. But yeah, like you say, grass isn't always greener on the other side.
Right.
Being coming from poverty to a lifestyle of rich and the famous, I guess.
You know, in this tale, we all of our characters lie in some form or fashion to each other, but Maggie, who's not immune to that, is kind of the great truth teller, the character of this. And when she opens the show, the first act is wonderfully performed by Elise, and it's, you know, it's a lot of dialogue from her. She really gives you like true insights into the other characters in that opening act. So, you know, when the other characters enter the play, you kind of, as an audience member, will know what's real and what's not. Absolutely. When it's coming out of their mouths. And that's thanks to Maggie's dialogue.
So she's almost like a narrator, but within the context of the play. She's
yeah,
narrating a lot of the stuff that you may be not aware of from the theatrics. Now, alcohol is involved in this play to some extent. Can you tell us about the alcoholism and how that plays into all of this?
Well, from my character, he is definitely the drinker of the family. You see, there's not too many moments on stage where he doesn't have a glass in his hand. But, yeah, he's, you know, trying to kill the past. And the only way he knows to do it is through the bottle.
And what about the past that is he trying to kill?
He was an ex-football player, and Skipper, his buddy that he was in pro football together, ended up killing himself, and so he's dealing with that pain from that, and just trying to numb out the present that he's living in now.
And there was some other subtextual themes going on there as well. Right?
Sure. Well, when you meet Brick, he's really at the lowest point of his life,
right.
And the alcohol is how he's trying to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think Blake does a great job as Brick. You know, with the glass in his hand, there's symbolism to it, but then also there's sometimes where he just straight up uses the alcohol as his communication to, you know, whether it's a servant in the house or whether it's to Big Daddy when they're talking to each other. But it's clearly his avenue to try to get back to somewhere where he can relate to people. He talks about, you know, Blake talks about this click in his head, and that has to happen after so much alcohol. And it's a pervasive theme in the play.
And Skipper had confessed his love to Brick at one point, and Brick, whether he felt that way or not, couldn't, you know, he really couldn't deal with that. He wasn't brought up like that, you know, and
this was in the 1950s when the play was written.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that contextualization of, you know, a relationship between men in that sense was more taboo than it had ever been, you know, I mean, in that
sure.
sense.
Yeah, and it was really omitted from the movie.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's just something you couldn't have Paul Newman doing up on a big screen.
Right. I don't think Paul Newman wanted to do that up on a big screen, but you never know.
Well,
I
mean, people do need to understand that when they come to see the play,
right.
the play that was originally written in, what, 53,
yeah.
and then he rewrote it in 74.
Yeah. This is the original.
And we're working off the 74 version.
Oh, okay.
And it's, but the play is very different from the film, like Chris was just mm-hmm. saying. You know, they pretty much omitted that underlying theme in the film, but a lot of the same themes, you know, are obviously still there: the dysfunction of the family and truth and lies. But people just don't come expecting, you know, the film version, because I think the play is much better, and it goes deeper, and. It's much more visceral. And being in front of a live performance, there's just nothing like that.
Yeah. And this is not Ozzie and Harriet. This is not
the
Nelson family.
This is not Andy Griffith.
Yeah, this is much more down to reality of what, you know, so many millions of families, you know, experience across the country.
It's just classic American theater.
Right, yeah.
And it's an honor to be portraying these characters. I'm just... I'm really excited for the audience to see this show. The cast is just been, it's just a tremendous cast, and I'm looking forward to sharing this.
Speaking of which, let's go through the various cast members and the characters that they play, and just give us a quick one line about who these characters. I know you can't sum up anybody in one line or two, but who are these characters?
Sure. Well, of course, Mike Martindale is going to be the only person in Shreveport-Bossier that could have played Big Daddy, I think.
Well, he's got the persona and the beard for it, you're working on it.
Yeah, and we have Paula Sample, who's playing Big Mama, and if you know Paula, you already know she's a drama queen, so she's fantastic as Big Mama. And then, of course, Blake, I think you're making your stage debut here at SLT?
I am, yes. This will be my first performance on stage there.
You know, we're on radio. You can't see Blake, but he's certainly a hunk. So,
Well, thank you.
I think Brick has to take his shirt off during the play. Let me just put that out there for marketing.
Definitely.
And don't worry, Big Daddy doesn't.
And Elise Birmingham, who's at the center of this performance, is our Maggie the Cat. And, I think people will expect some level of sultriness if they're familiar with Elizabeth Taylor. Mm-hmm. And we're thankful to have Elise to be able to bring that.
Absolutely.
And playing my wife is Jennifer
Watley.
And Jennifer has been on the stage at SLT before, but this is her first principal role. And oh my gosh, I can't imagine having cast someone who fits May's description. You know, we really didn't have to ask her to change her voice or her histrionics that much.
It's really pretty remarkable.
It's pretty remarkable. She's gotten what we call our growth award among the cast because, she's never had this much responsibility in a play before, and she's absolutely embracing it and working really hard.
She has picked it up tremendously.
Oh, my gosh. It's so fun to watch her. And then I'll play Gooper, who's the, devious lawyer brother. And, I just love lying to people anyways. So
this somebody who's perfect. Also after the estate, or I should say your wife,
That's right. That's right.
You know, that estate, everybody wants it.
Yeah. 28,000 acres of the richest land.
You're saying my line.
The 28,000 acre plantation is something certainly desirable for a family member.
28,000 acres of the richest land this side of the Valley Nile.
There we go.
Which is said throughout the show.
So right. They squaring off on it.
Yeah. So now Warren Grafton, who's he play?
Oh, Doc.
So that's our,
he's
that's our Reverend Tooker. There are two other characters that are sort of like outside of the family, the Reverend and the Doctor. So Warren is playing Reverend Tooker, and gosh, I think Warren is 90 years old right around there. And he brings so much energy in his role. It's really remarkable.
We just crack up when he's just doing his lines because he's just so great.
He don't have to
so
do
great.
Anything. He just says, and it's great.
It just comes out and it's natural.
Yeah. And then our stage manager, Alan Matheson, is also our doctor, Dr. Ball.
Okay.
And that's an important role, too, because, he's the one who has to sort of deliver the news to the family when they're ready to hear the truth.
Right. Which is not right away.
Exactly.
for those who have not seen the play or read the or seen the movie.
Act one, they do know that he's dying of cancer.
But he doesn't
but
know.
But Big Daddy doesn't know. And he goes through the entire second act not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not until he and Brick connect at the end of act two that Brick lets it slip, kind of, that, hey, this is it.
Yeah. And, act three is really coming to terms with that for Big Daddy in a lot of ways. And, figuring out that, the exit is as important as the entrance.
And it's interesting because in the original version of the play, Big Daddy didn't come back in to act three.
Mm.
And it was Elia Kazan that talked Tennessee Williams into rewriting and bringing Big Daddy back into act three. And kind of closing that story.
Interesting. I didn't know they. I love Elia Kazan. So
yeah,
the director. So, let's go into. Let's see the staging. There's a minimalist approach, and then there's decked out, full of you know, all of the accoutrements of this kind of a house? What kind of a visual?
I think we kind of straddle that line. It's not really minimalist at all. Personally, as an actor, I like an elaborate set. I like
lots of little trinkets,
Ridley
to work
Scott
with and play
kind
off.
Of,
yeah,
you know. Set in which there've been in the past. This one doesn't go like that, but it's not minimalist. It's a beautiful set. Derek and Alan have both. Derek Shiplov is our set director, and they've done a great job. It's really it gives you that flavor
right.
of that southern, you know, plantation and that history. But it, you know, it doesn't go overboard. And
well, if you're familiar with Shreveport Little Theater, you know it's a little theater, right? So it's not a large stage, but they've managed to add a lot of depth to this. You can't portray an entire 28,000-acre plantation on a small stage. So it takes place basically in Brick and Maggie's bedroom, but there's depth to it to where you can see the gallery and you can see through the windows into the estate. And it's really, really, really cool. Now, the stage is still being built. Well, we open tomorrow, so the finishing touches are being put on it right now. But I think people will be amazed at what they see when they walk in.
Right. Usually, you know, the illusion of things. You know, I want something to trick my mind, and my brain fills in the rest.
Exactly.
And that's part of the beauty of theater and literature is my brain's going to fill it in the way I want it. Mm-hmm. And so there's that, you know, there's that personalization of my own imagination involved. Of course, the dialogue and the execution of the actual text of the thing, that's the actors. But a lot of the rest of it is for the audience to absorb and kind of engage in. And that's
but
the fun.
There was, in fact, when one of our rehearsals, the point was made, you know, At some point, if we're doing our jobs, you're not noticing the set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not noticing the costumes. You're in the story,
right.
And you're being, you know, you're involved in what's happening on stage, and that's our job to make that magic happen.
Well, I love when you go to a theater performance and you walk in and you can see the set. If the curtain is not closed, you can see the set, and it's static and it's still. And then as soon as the players come in and doors start opening and things start moving around, all this life fills the stage, and it's just such a fun part of theater for me.
And something else that's critical is lighting.
Yeah.
And like right now, we're just full blown, you know, house lights and stuff. So it doesn't have that feel it has. Yeah. Julie is doing our lighting, and it brings it to life. That set is completely different.
Lighting and costuming.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And any musical score, if there's any, you know, I mean, that can really. Because even a small little bit of music can really punctuate the scene.
I agree with that.
If it's done it the right way, and it doesn't have to be throughout, it just has to be selective, you know, for the storyline.
But with a little bit of lighting and a little bit of sound, you can create a thunderstorm inside of a theater, and that will happen tomorrow night.
All right, cool. So, well, let's get to the brass tacks here, and how do folks go about getting tickets and finding showtimes?
Sure. Well, the first stop you should go to is ShreveportLittleTheater.com. Mm-hmm. You can actually, you know, pick your seats within the theater from there. There is also someone at the box office every day from noon till 4, so you can physically go to the theater on Margaret Street just off of Line and get your tickets there.
It's a beautiful little theater, too.
So. It is. It's the
longest continuously running community theater in the country.
In the 1920s?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the 100th season, right, that's opening.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's important to note, too, that, you know, we started practicing this play in 2019.
Yeah. For hopes of a 2020 performance.
The spring of 2020.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
You know, we were going to be part of, I guess, the 98th season at Shreveport Little Theater, right. And then that ended short, you know, soon before it was supposed to. And then the 99th season was COVID, so there were no performances last year in Shreveport Little Theater. So this is the triumphant return of the longest-running community theater in North America. And I guess the 100th season has already been planned, and, you know, that series of plays, which will include Children of Eden, who I know you'll be talking to later, does not include us, but we'll be the first performance to open up this 100th season. So, you know, this is sort of a historic time for Shreveport Little Theater, a place that's rich in history to begin with.
We have a studio that's in the theater off backstage, and we've been rehearsing in that studio for weeks, back in 2019.
Yeah.
And all of the pandemic had been, you know, building and building. And the day we got on stage, we rehearsed one night on stage. And then the next day they said, we're shutting everything down.
The lockdown was the next day.
So you've had all of this time to rehearse, to go over all your lines.
Well, actually, we didn't meet for a year and a half.
Yeah, I imagine, you know, because COVID and everything else. So when did you come back for the actual starting to rehearse for this performance?
I guess it was either May or June.
Yeah, back in, I think, May.
Yeah, late May, we finally got to see each other again.
Right.
And I think how it went down was about April. Our director, Mary Joris, called us and said, hey, Shreveport Little Theater wants to open back up, and we're going to be the first performance in September.
Okay.
And we were like, okay, great. We've got time to get back into it. And then about a week later, she said, you know what? We're going to do it in July. And so we started working almost immediately.
And we had another brick that was cast 2 years ago, mm-hmm. but he ended up moving out of town. Mm. And we were fortunate to get Blake to come in so that we basically started over when we came back. Because
as far as interactions between the characters.
Blake, Brick is in all three acts,
right?
You know, and so it was a reboot. So,
you know, hopefully,
but I think it worked out very well.
Yeah, hopefully the audience won't know anything about the difficulties we had getting this show together, right? That's the idea, and I think most theater companies would feel that way. You don't realize how hard it is to put this together.
You got a second play now, and that is Staging Cat on a Hot Tin Roof during the pandemic.
Right. Yeah.
Title, but it's a good thought, you know.
It's true.
So you just got to sit down and write it. Of course, most of it's written right now. So, I guess any final insights or any final thoughts you want to share about the play, get people out to come out and chance it if they've never seen it, and to come out and see it.
I think people are excited. People are, you know, for one, they're ready to get back and get back to live entertainment, whether it's live bands, concerts, or plays. And I can't encourage people enough to come. It's not The Odd Couple. It's not, you know, a night of laughs and frivolity. No. But it is an incredible show with an incredible cast. I'm honored to work with all of these guys. There's no weak link. I mean, and that's something to say. There's no weak link. Everybody is perfectly cast and just does a fantastic job.
I would just like to add that, you know, I think for people that are familiar with Tennessee Williams, they'll be in the theater and excited about seeing this performed at Shreveport Little Theater, a very adult play at a theater that, you know, often has a lot of musicals and children's performance. This will be in stark contrast to that. And, you know, when you talk about classic American playwrights, particularly from the South, I don't think there's, you know, anyone more revered than Tennessee Williams. So we'll be the actors up on the stage and we'll be bringing it to life. But I'm just amazed at the depth of his creativity, particularly in this story.
Well, guys, I want to thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome. That was Mike Martindale, who plays Big Daddy, and Chris Allen Evans, who plays Gooper, and Blake Watkins, who is going to play the character of Brick in the next production by the Shreveport Little Theater of Tennessee Williams' American classic, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Performances are scheduled for July 29th, 30th, and 31st, as well as August 6th and 7th at 7:30 p.m., and also on August 1st and August 8th at 2 p.m. at the Shreveport Little Theater, located at 812 Margaret Place. For complete details, you can visit the Shreveport Little Theater box office at www.shreveportlittletheater.com, and theater is spelled T-R-E at the end, or you can call 318-424-4439. That's 318-424-4439. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.